Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 16 of The Drop Set. I am your host and provocateur for the next 30 to 45-ish minutes, something like that. My name is Darren. Welcome aboard. If this is your first time listening, thank you for joining us. And if this is not your first time listening, if you've heard these a few times before, thank you for coming back. Basically, whatever brings you here, thank you. I'm appreciative of the audience for sure. So we got a lot of stuff to cover. Some good stuff this week. My clients did right by me this week. They brought the questions. They helped me out a little bit. So as I'm planning this stuff, they are a huge asset. I appreciate them for many reasons, and they really helped provide me with some good ideas for stuff to talk about this week. So let's just dive right into it here. So what's been going on? More of the same, pretty much. I mean, my life is nothing if not boring. If a camera crew followed me around all day, they'd have to be well paid because, damn, there's not a lot to watch. It's pretty boring. So it's me at my desk, I'm at the gym, I'm with the dogs, etc. I mean, you know, that's pretty much how it goes. So pretty predictable. So not a lot changing. We'll skip the news. We have poll results from last 2 weeks, actually. So the poll question is, what kind of diet do you follow? And the options were, hey, I follow a meal plan, or I'm doing more of a flexible-based thing, or I don't know, I'm just winging it, no plan, or just kind of eating intuitively. A little over half, 57%, said they're following some kind of a macro-based plan. So that's cool. I do encourage that. It's one of the things that I provide. All these options are things that I provide for my clients. I don't really provide winging it help, just because you don't need a coach to help you wing your diet. But I do write meal plans. I always push more and more, especially these days, macro-based plans, just because I am not a one-size-fits-all kind of guy. I'm not going to say a flexible dieting plan is for everybody, just like I wouldn't say a meal plan is for everybody. But you've got to talk to somebody, and if the only thing that's holding somebody back from trying a flexible-based plan is, I'm not really sure how to do it, okay, well, let's teach you and see what you think. So that's the role that I take. So coach, teacher, etc., all of those things. So about 30% wing it, and only about 15% said that they follow a meal plan. So small sample size, but nonetheless, it counts. So there's a new poll that will be up online by the time this is posted. I'm not sure yet what the question is. So that is what we call in the business a teaser. Go online and see what it is. Cast your vote and see how things stack up. So a couple of questions this week. Good questions from clients. One of them that came in and said, and this applies to a lot of things, but he was asking specifically about the Smith machine. So the Smith machine has a bad rap, in the gym. So, that rap comes from hardcore lifters, power lifters mostly, or people who adopt a powerlifting style mentality, even though they don't necessarily have a good reason to. So, you know, if you do a bench press in the Smith machine, it doesn't count. If you do a squat in the Smith machine, it doesn't count. And if you're tracking numbers, I would say, yeah. I mean, you're still working the muscles. And to think that a free weight barbell squat is a wholly different exercise from a squat in the Smith machine. The Smith machine forces you on a specific path. It does lend lateral and anterior posterior stability, so you don't have to rely quite so much on balance, but you still got to get under the bar that has some weight on it. You got to squat down, you got to push. Same thing. So there are subtle differences for sure. When I program it, I will sometimes specify, use a Smith machine, use a free bar. A lot of gyms you go to, you just don't have an option. So, Planet Fitness gets a bad rap. I have a lot of clients who lift at Planet Fitness, and we make it work. So most of those gyms do not have squat racks. So you've got to lift in the Smith machine pretty much if you want to do a squat. So the question, however, was, how do I log this? You know, what's the default weight on a bar on the Smith machine? Because I always push workout logging on my clients. It's important. It's something that, you know, if we're trying to force progressive overload under the in a bodybuilding way, we need to track variables. And one of the easiest variables to track is weight. We also want to track reps. If we can track tempo, if there was some way to quantify just exertion, like give yourself a score on a set, like that was a B+. Awesome. Great. But, you know, so we stick with the variables, and I've talked about this before, we stick with the variables that are a little bit easier to quantify. So on the Smith machine, weight, how do we handle that? every Smith machine is going to be different. You will find some, and the gym that I used to go to in town here, they had two Smith machines side by side, and one of them, you could unrack the bar, so it was in an unlocked position, and you could kind of toss it up, and it would go up, and then it would kind of change directions and slowly come back down on the rails. You could tell there was a counterweight involved. There wasn't a lot of friction. It was mostly just the counterweight. The one right next to it, if you unlocked it and you threw it up, it would immediately crash down to the floor and kind of like walk itself down side by side, just because it would get out of alignment with itself. The friction would hit. That machine was terrible to use. It was because you could be pressing and one side would kind of get stuck a little bit. And then, I mean, it's just an injury waiting to happen. So the point being, the way the Smith machines are constructed by different manufacturers or of different vintages, they're all completely different animals. So some of them will have a sticker on it that says starting weight, blah, you know, 20 pounds, 40 pounds, or whatever. The biggest mistake you can make is assuming that that bar on the Smith machine is the same as a free barbell and is going to count as a 45-pound starting weight. It's pretty much never the case. And even if it was, what you're implying there is that the mechanics of that movement are the same as if they were on a barbell. So the weights would be equivalent, and they are not. So if you have a Smith machine with a starting weight of, let's say, 20 pounds, and you add 115 pounds of weight to that, so you've got 135 pounds, and then you go and do a squat with a free barbell, and you stick a 45-pound plate on each side, so same weight, 135 pounds, the force required to move those things is going to be different, and it's going to feel different as an exercise. So don't try to make those two match up, where if you're tracking your workouts and you're using free barbell in the squat rack, barbell in the squat rack, barbell in the squat rack. Oh, all the squat racks are full. Let me go over to the Smith machine. What weights did I use last week? Okay, well, let me just load up the same. No, it doesn't work like that. They're different exercises. I said they're similar, but for tracking purposes, you can't equate the weights used between the two. So what I tend to do, just because, you know, some of the machines have stickers on there that say starting weight, etc. Most of them don't. They're old enough that if they had those stickers, they've peeled off or people have graffitied over them or whatever. So, I always make the assumption, and this applies also to a variety of plate loaded machines, like any hammer strength stuff that you see in the gym that's plate loaded. A lot of them will have those same stickers. Starting weight, 7 pounds is what it says on the high pole at one of the gyms I go to. And you can tell, like, you just put a little finger on that thing and you pull it towards you and it kind of bounces a little bit. Like, yeah, it doesn't take a lot of weight or a lot of force to move that. Still, I'm not going to say, okay, well, I put 45 pounds on there, so I lifted 52 pounds. Forget it. The way you note it on your log, and this is what I always recommend, is with a plus sign. So that indicates that I am on a plate-loaded machine, and I'm only counting the weight that I add to it. And if there are multiple options, so like the gym that I mentioned before that has the two Smith machines side by side, I will specify which one that I'm using so that I know, because, you know, invariably, let's say it takes a week for you to come back to that workout. Are you going to remember what Smith machine you used? Maybe, but don't make that assumption, because all I can go off of is my own experience, and I'm a dumbass and I will forget that shit every time. So you know, you do this for enough years and all these workouts and all these weeks start to blend together and you can't remember what you did yesterday, much less a week ago. So make a note of, if you have multiple options, what Smith machine you used. You know, if the workout calls for a machine chest press, you might have a couple options there. Some of them may be plate loaded, some may be selectorized. Make a note of what it is so that you know exactly what machine you were using, and then you can come back to that the next time. So that is the key. And the other thing to that is, if it is a machine that is loaded independently, so like there's a place on the left to put plates and a place to on the right to put plates, like a Smith machine, like a lot of things, if you have like a plate loaded preacher curl as an example, it's typically going to have one place where you can put weights, and so that would be like bilateral loading. So same, you know, the loading there applies to you know, you're working both arms together and not independently. So I would denote that, like on the Smith machine, if I put 45 pound plates on each side, I would write plus 45 each, rather than plus 90. Obviously, if it only has one place for you to load up, you just write plus 45 or whatever. So when it comes to figuring out the specifics of how to do that, the big thing is fall into a pattern, develop a routine, something that you can decipher and come back to easily and reproduce accurately. That's the big thing and the most important thing when it comes to that, is just making sure your workout logs, you know, I always treat workout logs as though I'm drunk and I'm writing a note to my sober self the next morning, just because that level of clarity is what it's going to take for me to be able to decipher it the next time I come back around to that workout. So not that I've done a lot of that note writing in the past, trust me, no, not at all. No, we'd never do that. So that pretty much covers that. Moving on, through the magic of digital software editing, I just took a nice little break, let the dogs inside. So they're wandering around back here. Bella, she's old. She's a 16-year-old Lhasa Apso Shih Tzu mix, and she still gets around pretty good. And she, you know, we joke that she does her little cardio routine a few times a day, where, you know, she sleeps about 22 hours a day, and when she's not sleeping, she gets up and walks around. The floor's slick, and, you know, she's arthritic. She's got some weak muscles, so she's kind of sliding around on the floor, kind of like hopping from one rug to the next. But you can kind of hear her little click, click, click of her feet on the floor. She's cute. Taz is right behind me. Say hi. Say hi, buddy. He's like, oh God, don't put me on the spotlight. All right. Anyway, so we've got two big topics to cover today, so let's get to it. The first one is I wanted to go over some chest training tips. So I've written about this before, but it's one of those things that keeps coming back. You see a lot of guys in the gym who hit chest on a regular basis. I mean, I've seen guys at, you know, one of the gyms kind of towards center of town where I go in there, and they're always there and they're always benching 5 days a week. And you would think they'd have like some serious chest development, and boy, they do not. And part of it is because their form is horrific. I mean, my God, they're trying to bench 255 when realistically they should probably do in like 115, just with the level of control they have over it. Not that I'm there to judge anybody, but I have eyes. I see what's happening and I see that it's not good. So, the form is bad, but also just the focus isn't there for a lot of people. A lot of people focus far too much on moving weight and not working the muscle. Now, that applies to pretty much everything, but for chest specifically, if you don't get your body set up right, your shoulders are going to be doing all the work, and your pecs are not, and therefore, you're going to have awesome anterior delts, which don't really look like much of anything, and you're going to have no pec development, and that is the opposite of what we want. So, understand what the primary function of the pectorals is, which is horizontal adduction. So imagine this, you are getting frisked by the cop and he stands, again, not like this has happened to me a lot, and he says, stand and put your arms out to the sides in front of you. So you're in kind of like a crucifixion pose, kind of like that, arms out to the side. Now, move your arms together in front of you, keep them straight until your palms touch each other well out in front of your body. That is horizontal adduction. That is what the pecs do. So think about doing that against resistance, and now you're making the pec work. So what does that look like? Well, it looks like a fly. It looks like a pec deck fly. It looks like a dumbbell fly. That's an isolation movement that works the pec. So what do most people do when they work the chest? They press. They do bench press. They do incline press, flat bench, decline, dumbbell press, Smith machine press, etc. I like to do chest workouts sometimes where I don't do any pressing. I'm just doing cable movements and flies, etc. all day long, just because there's so many varieties there. Hits things differently. Feels great. But you should press as well. You know, don't avoid anything. And in fact, find the stuff that you suck at and get better at it. So for pressing, all pressing is it's basically horizontal adduction, because that just matters what happens at the shoulder. So if you watch somebody press and you look from the shoulder to the elbow and see what's happening, it's the same movement. It's horizontal adduction. Maybe the angle changes if the bench is a little bit different, but it's the same movement. But it's the elbow bends, it flexes, and then it extends as you press up and then lower back down. So same basic movement. So focus on that, which doesn't necessarily change any of your mechanics, but you think about the movement differently when you do that. So one thing that you can do there is try and incorporate that particular movement, that articulation, horizontal adduction, into everything. Make it a point of emphasis. So when you're doing a pec deck fly, don't just move the handles, but think about what that horizontal adduction feels like. It can really help also if you do something with one hand, take your free hand and feel what the pec on that working side is doing. So you can feel it contract as you go through the range of motion. You can emphasize that squeeze. You can kind of feel the tension release as you go through the negative. And then do that on both sides. And then when you come back and do it bilaterally, both sides together, you'll have a better clue of how to get those muscles cued and doing the right thing. So, another thing that happens. So, when you press with dumbbells, for example, one major difference between that and a barbell press is that the space between your hands is not fixed. So with a press, you can converge. With a dumbbell press, you can converge, meaning, you know, if your hands are just outside shoulder width at the bottom of the movement in that stretch position, as you press up, they can come closer together. I will typically advocate not to do that. And you may say, well, Darren, why? You just said horizontal adduction. When the hands come together a little bit more, that's good. Yeah, but I find that for me, and this could be different for everybody, and I've certainly gotten feedback like this from clients before. Some of them agree with me, and some of them say, I feel it better if I do converge. The main thing is, what most people do by default is they allow their hands to converge. Try it the other way and see. See how it feels. Try and avoid that convergence. Same thing with a shoulder press, actually. And that's a little bit more universal with a shoulder press. If you can avoid convergence, it's pretty much always more productive. Now, on a barbell, your hands are fixed. So convergence is a non-issue. But what I tell people is, think about that convergence. So your hands are not going to move, but think about moving them inward like you're trying to compress the center of that bar in on itself. Like if you could bend steel, you're trying to make that bar shorter. Move your hands in like that, or at least make the pecs work to try to move your hands in without actually allowing them to move across the bar, because, you know, that's bad news and difficult and dangerous. But think about that inward squeezing as you press up and as you come back down throughout the whole range of motion. If you do that, you're going to need to reduce the weight significantly, but your activation with the pecs should go through the roof. So give that a shot. Activation movements are big. These are like little warm-up exercises, things like a Venn press, for example. So if you want to emphasize the horizontal adduction as kind of an isolation warm-up movement, what you're going to do is bring your hands together right in front of you, kind of like you're praying or something like that, but turn your hands so your palms can firmly touch each other, and then just squeeze your hands together right in front of your chest. You should feel that start to warm things up. A Venn press is what happens when you do that, but with a couple of plates between your hands, and then you extend your elbows out so your hands go way out in front of you, and then you bring it back. My favorite way to execute a Venn press is with three plates, very lightweight. Start with 2.5 or 5 pounds, and don't feel like you have to go up much heavier than that under any circumstance. It's not a power movement. It's an activation movement. Keep it light. But with three plates, you've got your hands on the outer plates, and then there's one in the middle that's only held in place by how hard you squeeze on the two outer plates. So that's a great one. I will often, at the start of a chest workout, start with that and superset that with my first real movement, like a press or a fly or something like that, just because that's going to help wake things up. It's going to help, you know, signal to the pecs, this is how you're working. And really, you know, when you bring that plate conglomeration back in towards you, give it an extra little squeeze, like push them together, make them feel it, and then extend the arms back out in front of you and try it that way. So the other thing, and this is like numero uno, biggest point ever for chest work. And I tell people this, and I will demonstrate it, and I will ask them to do it, and I will get video back from them of them trying it. And invariably, it takes a few rounds back and forth before they really get what I'm talking about here. Retract the shoulders. So when you retract the shoulders, you pull them back. So think about, you know, trying to get your shoulder blades to touch each other. So get your shoulders retracted back hard. Do it in your chair right now. See if you can get your traps burning just by how hard the shoulders are retracting back. The traps are the muscle group that's responsible for doing that. When you do that, and then you do pretty much any chest exercise, any variation of a press, any variation of a fly, you're basically taking the deltoid, the anterior deltoid, out of the equation and forcing the pec to do more work. The key, however, is that you have to keep the shoulders retracted throughout the entire range of motion. So it's pretty easy when you're in that stretch position, you're all the way back, you're getting ready to press up or you're getting ready to fly, you retract those shoulders back, but then everybody, when you press up or when you execute the fly, the shoulders come forward. Keep them pulled back. Short arm the movements. It should look like a T-Rex is pressing that weight up just because your shoulders are pulled so far back, it looks like you've got little T-Rex arms. That's how you know you're doing it correctly. If you reach for the ceiling and you try to push the weight up as high as you can, you've completely lost that shoulder stability. You're probably killing your pec activation. You're making the deltoid take over. And you know what? It's chest day, bros. It's not shoulder day. That's Tuesday. You know, keep the shoulders retracted. So critical for pretty much every movement. I'm trying to think of a good exception for that. And I mean, there's a couple of movements that I do. There's one that's called a pec pulse, which I won't even try to explain that. It really needs to be demonstrated visually. That's one where there's a phase of the movement where the shoulder kind of has to come forward a little bit. But I mean, any press, barbell, dumbbell, machine, any fly, dumbbell, cable, pec deck fly, any of those things, keep those shoulders retracted. Allow yourself a reset in the middle of the set. So if you feel things slipping, you know, stick your head onto the bench, lift your shoulders up to give you a little bit of room to retract them harder. Don't be afraid to do that. You know, the other thing is, you know, we're probably not lifting max weight here, just because if you are, then you're focusing more on pushing weight and less on activation. So it should be pretty easy to perform a little reset. If you're trying to rep out with 150-pound dumbbells, it's going to be a little tougher. But, you know, lower that weight a little bit, slow down your reps, don't brute force it and feel the muscle work. The other thing is people always talk about angles, with chest, like, oh, you got to hit it flat bench, decline, incline, hit the chest from all angles. Okay. I mean, I like that for variety. But as far as angles that are important, it's the angle of wrist rotation and how you're gripping things, that I think are more critical than what I would call the angle of attack, like the angle of your bench. So, try a cable fly. I mean, it helps to have a little bit of the vocabulary down. So understanding the difference between pronated, supinated, and neutral grip. So pronated would be like your overhand grip where you can see the back of your hands. Supinated would be your underhand grip where you can see the palm of your hands. A neutral grip would be, where the palm of your hands can see each other. They're facing each other. When you do a cable fly with handles, by default, that's going to be a neutral grip. Okay. Now try taking the handles off and just grab the cable, wrap your thumb and forefinger around the little ball that's at the end of the cable that keeps it from retracting and back into the pulley mechanism. And do a try a pronated grip instead. So overhand, so you're able to stare at the back of your hands throughout the whole thing. Try that. See how that feels. Try a supinated grip also, which is typically going to be a little bit easier with a handle. And then try this, you know, try it with the pulley set high, with the pulley set low, with the pulley set at shoulder level. When you're way out in front of it, like, you know, grab the handles and take two large steps forward. Now try it more in line with the weight stack. Changing those angles, ooh, yeah, you're going to feel that, dude. Absolutely. Absolutely. You'll notice also that the machines, you know, barbell, you know, the only thing you can really adjust is width on that. I would not do a reverse grip barbell press. It's not called a suicide press for no reason. That's probably a little overdramatic, but risk reward is not there for me. Dumbbell press, you can vary. You know, you may want to supinate a little bit as you press up. That can be really valuable. A neutral grip press is good as well. Even the machines, like a chest press machine, the handles are going to be large so that you can grab it in several positions. So you can go with a wider grip or a more narrow grip. Always experiment with a more narrow grip. I know people associate that with more tricep activation, but really it's what your elbows do that are going to dictate that. So if you go with a more narrow grip, but you let your elbows flare out, for me, if I'm struggling through a chest workout to get the activation where I want it, that's going to kick it up a notch. And then if you go with a narrow grip and you keep your elbows tight against your torso, maybe you need to elevate the seat up a little bit. That's what's going to get the triceps on fire. But if you keep the elbows out a little bit more, I think it'll be more productive for chest. So lots of things to try. So give it a shot. report back to me. That's your homework. Let me know what you think. You know, I don't claim to have a monopoly on good ideas, and I also don't claim that every idea that I have is going to work well for everybody. But the idea with this stuff is to try things that you haven't done before. Put your body through a different set of paces. Don't allow yourself to get stuck in a routine that's not working for you. Find something where you feel like your level of engagement is high, and then stick with that for 3 to 5 weeks. Progress through it, and then change up some variables and go from there. So the other topic that I wanted to cover today is travel. So this came from my client, Rob, who is going to be looking at doing some travel coming up soon for work, possibly repeated travel as well, a couple times a month. So which is different from, you know, like vacation. You know, this is, you know, what I always tell people when the topic of travel comes up is, and these are people, you know, clients who are asking me for advice and how do I handle this? I always say, okay, the first thing I need you to do is dictate the terms of this trip to me. If this is a once in a lifetime vacation and you're going to be gone for 10 days, great. Go have a good time and we'll see where you're at when you get back. Those are not the times where you want to be following a meal plan, where you want to be waking up at 5:30 to bang out 45 minutes of cardio and then go sightsee and then go hit the gym in the afternoon. Take your damn vacation, please. I mean, live a little bit. You've got to find balance somewhere. Something's got to give. So for those special trips, I always tell people, tell me about what this trip is. If it's something special, make it special. Don't feel like you have to take your workout plan with you. So, or your diet for that matter. So, on those cases where it is, something like this, where it's, you know, more practical, it's a business trip or whatever, it's a recurring thing. Like I'm on the road all the time, I'm driving, I'm flying, etc. What you need to be able to do is prepare for your destination. Don't worry so much about, and this will change if it's more of a frequent thing. Like if you're going on business trips every weekend, yeah, your travel days matter because that's going to count for a larger percentage of your days. But, you know, if you're taking a trip every, you know, 3, 4, 5 months, something like that, and you're going to be gone for, you know, 4 or 5 days, okay, well, the travel days, they're really difficult, especially if you're going through an airport. They're really difficult to nail. It can be done, but it's hard, and it requires a lot of planning, and it requires a lot of pain. But the time at your destination is more critical because there's more of it there. So make sure that you are setting yourself up in a quality facility. So this does not mean you have to stay in a place with a kitchenette, with a dishwasher and a hot plate or anything like that. But damn it, make sure you've got a fridge and a microwave. You know, call ahead, assuming you've got some kind of control over where you're staying. You know, if your company is booking the hotel for you, make nice with the people doing the travel arrangements. See if they can make any special accommodations for you, because there are plenty of places out there where there's no microwave in the room. And yeah, there's one down in the lobby, but it's for employees only. So you're just kind of screwed. And what are you going to do then? Well, I mean, your options are limited. So it can be difficult. And if you don't have a fridge in your room where you can, you know, find a place to go buy some pre-cooked food and store it in there, you're doubly screwed. So make sure you've got a fridge, make sure you've got a microwave. If you can do that, you're 60% of the way there. Another thing that you can do, this actually goes back to our poll question, is learn how to do flexible dieting. If you're trying to follow a meal plan, you're not going to be able to make substitutions. You know, if one of your staple food items proves to be something that doesn't travel well, or it's something you can't find in this new location where you're going, if you don't know how to do macro substitutions, you're going to be kind of screwed. So get into that world, immerse yourself in that, learn how to do it, follow that as a plan, and then you can kind of roll with the punches and you can see what's available, what's practical and what's not based on the accommodations you have at hand. And then you can adapt, as necessary there. So learn how to handle macros, make sure you have access to, you know, the proper, accoutrements, if you will. Find a gym. If you're serious and if you're in a phase where you want to continue doing this and you're going to put in the effort to continue with your diet while you're doing this, do not stick yourself in a hotel gym. find a legitimate facility that's nearby that you can go. So do your research ahead of time, find the gyms in the area, find out if they offer, you know, guest passes, you know, weekly trial passes, something like that. But find out what your options are ahead of time. Plan ahead. You know, the interwebs do make it really easy. It's 2017, so that is probably the, you know, all of this stuff is so much easier than it would have been back in the day, where you might be going to an unknown place and it's hard to know what's there. But it's really easy these days. So you just got to put in the work and do it. So research where you're staying. Look at the gyms that are in the nearby area, and make a phone call. You know, see what they have as far as, you know, you can explain your situation. I'm traveling. You know, what can I do if I only need a pass for a week or something like that? You might pay a little bit for it. But it'll be worth it because you'll have access to a good facility. I find that often a change of scenery like that can be really energizing anyway, so you might just plan on having a really great week of workouts there. The hotel facilities are still usually good for cardio, so you can do it for that. But, you know, if you're going to be on a trip for more than a handful of days, you're going to want to lift, absolutely. And so finding a gym where you can be at is going to be critical. Meal prep bag can be a godsend. So this would be like a six-pack bag. Isolator bag, Fitmark, you know, any of those companies, there are many of them that have meal prep bags that are refrigerated. They have compartments for storing all this stuff, etc. You might not take a whole lot of stuff with you, but when you're there, you can get stuff. And then if you're out and about, like if you've got to go to meetings, work functions, etc., you're going to a conference, okay, you can take that with you. Yeah, you're going to be the weird guy who's bringing food with you that you can eat all day. But hey, you know what? You're a bodybuilder. And if you aren't used to people looking at you weird about your food, then you just haven't been doing this long enough. It comes with the territory. So expect it, get used to it, own it, and just say, yep, this is me. And that's why I'm a badass and you're not. So take a bag like that. Do your shopping. Find one that works for what you need. There's all kinds of designs. You can find them, some that look like designer handbags. You can find some that are backpacks that have a non-refrigerated place where you can put your laptop. There's a lot of options out there. I have a first generation six pack bag that, I mean, I won't lie, it's held up pretty well, but it's kind of fallen apart a little bit at this stage. I mean, I got it, boy, 7 or 8 years ago, I think. It's holding up okay. I use it rarely anymore because, you know, I'm spoiled. I work from home. But when I worked in a gym, you bet, I packed 4 meals in that thing every day, 4 or 5. And it was a lifesaver. It was awesome. So I would strongly recommend that. You know, you can put prepped meals in there, you know, protein, carb, veggie meals. There's compartments where you can store shakers. There's places where you can put supplements, utensils, seasonings, etc. So the other thing that I would recommend, and this is important, is find a grocery store nearby. And as soon as you land, I would say maybe even before you check into the hotel, I mean, unless you're not sure if there's a fridge or not, in which case, go verify that and then go grocery shopping. Pick up the stuff you need. And plan on doing zero meal prep. Buy your stuff pre-cooked. So because you are a macro ninja, because we talked about that already, being well-versed in how to do flexible dieting, you can vary your protein sources, your carb sources, your fat sources, and find stuff that is easy, convenient, pre-packaged, pre-cooked, and just go with that. It might not be the most awesome stuff, but it'll work. So as far as clean sources go, you know, you can buy pre-cooked chicken breast at pretty much any grocery store. They're in bags. They're usually like 6 or 9 ounces. You'll pay a little bit more for that, but for a handful of days to not have to do any meal prep, it's great. And all it's in the bag. It's portioned out. You may want to bring your own food scale, especially if your portion sizes are, you know, typically a little smaller, a little larger than what comes in those bags. And then just, you know, stick it in there with your carb, which, you know, you can do pre-cooked rice. Those Uncle Ben's Ready Rice pouches are awesome, super convenient. They don't even, you know, I mean, they say, you know, tear open the pouch a little bit and then, you know, put it in the microwave for 90 seconds. Screw that. I mean, you're going to microwave the stuff eventually before you heat it. So just, you know, take it cold in the bag and put it in your little Tupperware container along with your protein source. If you want to throw some veggies in there, depending on how long it's going to be in there, you can usually just throw frozen veggies in there and then microwave it with everything else and they'll thaw out. And there's going to be a little bit of extra moisture in there, which will keep stuff from getting too dry anyway. So, and then get some seasonings, you know, just a simple, like, you know, multi-seasoning grinder or something like that can help. A salt shaker, maybe all you need, a little bit of soy sauce, something like that, a little hot sauce, a little mustard. But get something like that just so that you're not eating this plain gruel, and spice it up, you know, make it interesting. Get your fats in there via nuts, probably the easiest way to go. Nut butters can be a little bit messy, difficult to measure out unless you just want to pull out your food scale all the time. So go with foods that are the very definition of the path of least resistance. Pre-cooked, and you know, you can go with unclean sources as well. Like if you want to do some crackers or something like that, cool. I mean, you know, like we said, you're well-versed in how to handle macronutrients, so you can do that. You can portion things out. You can just keep the container of things in your meal prep bag, pull it out, get your serving there, log it, and you're good to go. So the other thing is, especially if you don't travel all the time, like if it's a trip now and then, you know, allow yourself a little bit of leeway. You know, you're going out, there might be a dinner with colleagues or clients or something like that. So, you know, don't aim to completely blow it. Like, well, it's my dinner out, so yeah, screw it, I'm going for it. I'm having appetizer, I'm having the burger with fries, I'm having dessert, and I'm having 14 beers with it too. I mean, don't be destructive, but don't also just pull yourself out of functions like that and say, oh, well, you know, I could have this dinner with clients, which could really help my business. Oh, but my meal plan. I mean, no, I've known people like that. Don't be that person. Most people, most of us don't gravitate that way by default, which is good. Don't let yourself go down that path. You know, it's a trip. It is probably not a bodybuilding related trip, so make sure you get your primary function of the trip completed. And if that's entertaining people, great. You don't have to drink to entertain people. I get this a lot. Like, you know, people expect me to drink. No, they don't. They don't give a shit what you're doing. They want to talk to you. They want to get to know you. If you decide you're going to drink water instead of having a couple beers or shots or whatever, I don't think that's going to be a deal breaker. So, you know, stick with what's right for you, but don't be, you know, super fussy about it. So I feel like I'm giving everybody parenting advice here, and that's not my intention at all. So anyway, traveling is all about dictating the terms right up first thing. And then from there, being able to just make sure that you're planned ahead of time, focus on the destination, not so much the travel to and from. You know, eat well before, eat well when you land. You don't have to avoid everything in the airport. There are options there that are going to be terrible. There are some that are okay. Once again, your macronutrient and flex logging experience is going to be invaluable in those circumstances. So use it to your advantage. You can do it. And then just make sure that your facilities are there. So you've got the food storage, you know, the microwave, you've got a gym access, and you should be good to go. So, wow, that's it. We're coming in at a lean 37 minutes here for this podcast, which is awesome. So that's it. So we talked about a little Q&A on Smith machine and just logging weights on machines. We talked about chest activation tips and then travel as well. So covering all the bases here. So until next time, that's all I got. So once again, my name is Darren Starr. My website, 5starphysique.com. There will be a new poll up by the time this goes live. So go cast your vote on that. You can find me on Instagram at 5starfit, facebook.com/5starphysique. And if you want, you can email me directly. It's Darren, D-A-R-I-N, at 5starfitness.com. All right. Have a good week, everybody.